Hey, welcome to Studio B, the Emory and Henry College Bonner podcast. Join me, Ryan Vaughn, and my co-host, Colton, Peyton, and Mary Catherine, as we discuss themes of place, common ground, and the impact that one can make. All right here in Studio B. Welcome back, everybody. Episode 2. If you're listening, it means you stuck around.
That's right. Yeah, they did. I'm excited.
Me too. I didn't think we could top last week's interview. And this week we have Monica Howell.
Right? Yeah, and she's an interesting person.
She is, yep. Yeah. I was a little confused on the last name. She said, just like think of Billy Joel. Yeah. And then Monica Howell.
Yeah, a lot of people got confused about how to pronounce her name.
Right? Yeah, so Monica is the alumni director here at Emory and Henry College. And just a goofball, cool person, right?
Yeah, she really is.
She's super outdoorsy, right? We talk about nature and...
a lot of nature.
It was kind of a therapy session for me because we talked about my fear of birds. I didn't think that was going to happen.
Yeah, that's crazy. I didn't even know that you feared birds.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess you'll just have to listen to it.
Yeah, I know they will. Yeah, right? That's right.
Here we go. Here's our interview with Monica Howell. Perfect. Well, welcome to Studio B. Just to let you know where we are. We're on the second floor of Miller in the podcast studio that we didn't know existed.
There's a podcast studio?
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
We are in this black hole. It's weird. It's in between two math offices. It's this little dark room with a podcast.
Oh, it's what the radio station used to be. Yeah, that used to be the radio station. Oh, I got you now. Yeah. But they're calling it the podcast station now? That's pretty cool.
Podcast studio, yeah.
I don't know how long it's been since it's been used, but we're here now.
We are here now. And
That's awesome. We're
giving it a second life. So welcome to Studio B. This is the Emory and Henry College Bonner podcast. We're so excited to have you on today.
Well, thanks for asking.
Yeah. So from what I've heard, you've been here at Emory for a while now, right? But we'll jump into that in a second. I want to know, who is Monica, and specifically your life before you came to Emory and Henry College?
Oh, I don't remember that. That's been too long. I don't know what happened before that. I started as a student in 1981. And so it really does seem like the land before time to talk about who I was before that. But, my real claim to fame is that I went to high school with Tao Stanley. And, I think anything after that is going to pale in comparison, really. That's my lead answer on who I was before that. But grew up in Dublin, Virginia, not Ireland, and started college in 81 at Emory and Henry. Loved it. It was transformative for me. I was an only child, and so suddenly being in a place where I got to have all these friends who were my age and share space with them and grow up together was just a new experience for me, and I loved it. And I loved the academics. I loved everything about it. So I just had a great experience. And when I graduated, to be honest, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And I knew there was a position in admissions that was opening up because Walter Weichel was leaving to go to seminary. And so I just took his spot for a year. And then I ended up staying much longer than that.
Gotcha. Well, cool. You're kind of rooted here. Fun fact, we had Tal Stanley on the podcast last episode.
I can't follow that. He's smart and he knows big words, and I'm not going to be able to follow that very well.
And he's just a fun guy to interview sometimes too, because I've known him for a few months now, and I still never know what he's going to say. Right?
You don't.
Yeah, sometimes he's like a mystery. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Can you tell us what Tal was like in high school? This is what I want to know.
Because I don't want him telling you what I was like in high school. So we were both, let's just put the lie out there. We were both terribly popular and good looking. And, everybody wanted to be us. Yeah, we were those kids.
Oh, gotcha. Cool.
He was, but I will say this, he was very driven even as a kid. And he was a good leader. We went to church together also, and he was a great leader at church. Always, sort of took charge of the youth group and that kind of thing. And his mom, I'm just going to brag on his mom because I love his mother so much. And, he's one of five siblings, and his mom knew how to cook for crowds. And so anytime we were doing any kind of a big church supper, it's like, call Miss Stanley. She'll know how to cook for a whole bunch of people. And just anytime we needed to know anything, we called Mrs. Stanley because she's one of those moms that just knows how to do everything. So it's a cool family. And yeah, I hope you get to meet the whole, gang sometime, because they're a nice bunch of folks.
I hope for that too. No, Tal's an incredible guy. So I can only imagine what the rest of his family is like.
I thought it was kind of cool how I was talking to Ryan beforehand, if you actually knew Tal or knew of him. And that was pretty cool that y'all, you know, had the chance to go to high school together. So that's,
yeah, she already answered one of our questions. Like, I guess we can pack up and go home.
No, we can't.
Are we done? Okay.
No, we're not.
It's been great talking to you.
That's pretty cool. That's yeah. Awesome.
So I guess where we're moving toward in conversation now is, so high school. And then can you tell us about your time at Emory and Henry College? Because I'm sure it was a lot different in 1981 that I'm a freshman here in 2022. So what's changed? What's been the same? Do you have any moments that have really shaped you while you had here?
Yeah, you know, yes, it is much different. And we just welcomed back members of the Emory and Henry Alumni Board yesterday. The Alumni Board is not the Board of Trustees. We don't get to make big decisions. We're just sort of a sounding board for the college. And so they hadn't been back on campus during the whole COVID thing. So it had been about 2 years since they've been back. And I said, let's don't have a meeting. Let's do a tour. And so we went to the Career Center and heard Lisa Betty talk about what they're doing. The president talked with us about the expansion plans. Emma Tracy talked about the business school. Tracy Wright talked about what it's like in student life and housing now. A couple guys in the outdoor program talked to us about that program. And I say all that to say, I watched their faces the whole time, and the whole time they were pretty much slack-jawed at all the cool opportunities that are here now, at all the neat services and offices and administration that are here to help the students. One of the things that I think worries alumni when they see changes, you know, we all kind of loved it. We loved our time here so much. And when we were here in the 80s, that's the only thing I can really speak to from a personal standpoint. But when we were here in the 80s, we did not have as many activities. We didn't have as many faculty. Well, we didn't have as many staff members. We didn't have as many support services. And I joked that we were kind of thrown to the wolves. And so it tickles me when people say, oh, y'all are changing the college and it's going to be so impersonal. And I just want to say, oh my goodness, it is just the opposite. It's actually more personal now, because students have a chance to be so much more supported in what they're doing. They get better guidance. I'm not dissing the days that we were there. It's just so different. You know, you guys what are they called? The coaches, like life coaches almost, for, you know, student success and, you know, just all these wonderful opportunities. And you've got chances to learn about leadership, and you're not just like elected to something. People will teach you how to be a good leader and teach you how to have those experiences and make them better. It's just, things are great here right now. And we loved every minute of our time here. And again, for me, I would have to say that part of what I probably remember the most is just the fact that it was, in fact, my first time away from home. I was making a bunch of friends. I was trying, you know, I was going out to Bella's at 10 o'clock at night. Who leaves the house at 10 o'clock? You know, all those things that you do when you're college students that, you know, it's just kind of part and parcel. But for me, it was all really, really new, because I didn't have those experiences in high school like a lot of folks do. And so for me, the socialization aspect was probably as important as anything. I made lifelong friends. You know, I learned how to get up and talk to people, like in a gathering. I learned how to get up, stand up in front of people and talk. All those things were foreign and pertinent, impossible when I came here as a freshman. And so I just feel like it was a transformative time for me. But that was a longer answer than probably what I should have given. But the gist of it is, we loved our time here. We had the greatest time ever. We get back together and we pick up right where we left off, telling dumb stories and laughing about stuff, because we just had the greatest time together and learned so much. But I say that to say, I'm so proud of what Emory and Henry is doing now, because I feel like you all have so many opportunities, like a podcast studio. Who knew? But, you know, so many cool opportunities to try things and experience things and get things on your resume before you even leave the campus. So pretty exciting.
Yeah, no, don't apologize for a long answer. I think that question deserved a long answer, and you knocked it out of the park with that.
Well, thanks.
Obviously, you know, I wasn't here in the 80s, so I didn't know what it was like back then, but I can just tell you now, this place is incredible. We're really excited to be here and to be able to have this open conversation about it, you know?
Yeah, I like
I
liked how you talked about the student success and, mm-hmm. you know, you have coaches, especially being a student athlete, it helps. You know, having an extra person there, you kind of have two coaches and just instead of one, and they help you academically, on the field with your actual coach, and then off the field, you know, in the classroom. So I think that helps a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome how the improvements have been made here mm-hmm. since that time. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I give tours, and one thing I make sure to say during every tour, which is true, is that there is not one person on this campus who doesn't want you to succeed.
And yes,
I think you can agree to that as well. And I think that even accounts for our alumni as well. You can speak to that.
Yeah, you know, and that's something that I have said to prospective students for years. You know, there are some schools, maybe not as much now, I don't know, but I mean, there's a lot of big schools that they're so crowded, they almost try to weed you out a little bit. You know, they're like, oh, sorry, you didn't make it, you're out. They just don't give you those kinds of chances. Whereas here, if you don't do well or whatever, or, you know, hit the marks, it's not because you didn't have a lot of chances, because, you know, Tracy Wright was talking yesterday about the kind of personal touches they do, where if your success coach is trying to get in touch with you and they can't get you to answer the phone, they'll send somebody to your room to go talk to you. And that kind of follow up and making sure people don't fall through the cracks, you're just not going to get that everywhere. And I'm really excited to see what she has done, what she has brought to the campus in terms of personal attention to students. And I'm excited to know that as she hires people for student life and student affairs, that those people also seem to be people who really care about the folks. And yeah, it's all about seeing young people succeed and grow. Nobody wants y'all leaving here and not having had a good experience and not having had experiences that are going to help you with your career and your life. And so, yeah, the folks here will really bend over backwards to make sure that you're okay and thriving.
Yeah, I have to ask this question. When I think of 80s, I think like Prince and parachute pants. Can you confirm that's what you would see walking around these brick sidewalks?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, heck yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and it's funny that you said that about the fashions. First of all, you're really not going to do much better than Prince. Although there's a girls band called Climax that was an awful lot of fun too.
Okay.
Look up the Men All Pause. There was a lot of fun dance music in the 80s, you know, and that's, I don't know what you all do about clubs and that sort of thing, but that was a big thing in the 80s, is that we would, you know, get together and very safely, you know, support each other and go dancing and that kind of thing. And it was a lot of fun. I can't dance. I'm bad at dancing. I just enjoyed going. And I just enjoyed acting like I knew what I was doing. But the music was fun back then. And it's funny you said that about the fashion, because I was walking behind some students the other day, and this is so dumb, but I was really noticing everybody's pants length, because this one guy had some really kind of like, they were hitting about the ankles. And in like middle school, high school, we would have called those high water breeches, because they just were a little bit too short and it, you know, looked like you were heading out to, you know, do some work in a flood. So I was so happy that everybody, but the kid next to him had on like, you know, they were like hitting his shoe, and the other kid was hitting somewhere else. And I thought, thank God, nobody's paying attention to that anymore, because, you know, they're pants and who cares how long they are. But it just made me happy that didn't seem like such a big deal. But yes, parachute pants were a thing, although, honestly, I would have to say that we were pretty much jeans and a sweatshirt kids for the most part, unless we were, you know, going out dancing, in which case it was a little different. But there was a lot of that preppy stuff and button downs and Adabee necklaces. And it was pretty corny, but it was, you know, it's what we did.
That's what it was. Yeah. No, I can't dance either. Can you dance, Peyton?
No, not me. No, I cannot dance. But I'd like to... What I do like to say is, I didn't grow up in the 80s, but for some reason, it does make me happy when you see that type of the music and it comes back today and people's listening to it. That makes me happy. I mean, that's what I grew up listening to. That's what my parents listened to. So I'm all for it. So when it comes back and people listen to it, it just makes me happy. Mm-hmm. I mean, well, you know, it's just awesome.
How many times have you been somewhere like a ball game or something, and as soon as like Janet Jackson comes on, everybody's moving?
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like
that's how stuff. It should be.
Exactly. Everybody gets so excited. It's like, and I get so cracked up watching the folks your age know all the words to like 80s songs, and I'm like, how do y'all know that? Yeah. But I realized you heard it in the bassinet growing up, you know, because that's the thing. Although I did hear an interesting conversation on NPR, because I'm an NPR geek, about the fact that music companies are not investing a lot of money in new artists because they're finding that it's a better investment to just keep recycling old stuff, and it's not giving new artists much of a chance. So there's a little something goofy for you to Google later, and you can just kind of see what the industry is doing about all that.
Yeah, it's funny we're talking about music. Before we have our podcast, I still get nervous, but I heard that if you're nervous, that means you care. So, like, that's – I get nervous for everything now.
Yeah.
So we have, like, little jam-out sessions in here right before we get on Zoom.
Fine. What are we listening to?
Today we had a mix of Fleetwood Mac.
Fleetwood Mac, yes.
Talking Heads. Oh, yeah. No, it was good. I love David Byrne.
Some Tom Petty.
Tom Petty, yeah.
Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, did you know that the original name for Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, I heard this on NPR as well, it was Tom Petty and the King Bees.
The
King Bees? I did not know that.
I kind of like the ring to it.
Me too.
Because he didn't use it. If I ever start a band, copyright right now, yeah, it's going to be Ryan Vaughn and the King Bees.
Hey, that's pretty cool.
Right? Excited y'all found this out on NPR. That makes me happy right there.
Yeah, that's funny. We've talked about your pre-Emery Henry life with Tal Stanley, and then your we love that.
That sounded really I don't know what that sounded. My pre-Emery Henry life with Tal Stanley. Yeah, okay, but go ahead.
And then we had your college experience with our parachute pants and Prince and Climax. It sounds like. And
yes, so, Climax. You gotta look that. Starts with a K. Mm-hmm.
With a K. Climax with a K.
I think it starts with a K. Mm-hmm.
Is someone in the studio writing that down? Let's see. And so now we're curious about your position at the college right now. You are the alumni director. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's a job that I've had for kind of a long time. I've been the alumni director for about 30 years or so. And it's one of those jobs that the fellow who had it for a very long time was a gentleman I know you've seen walking on campus. It's a fellow named Henry Dawson. And he tends to walk around campus right often. And he graduated from Emory Henry in 1962. And I used to look at him and his job, and I would think, that's a cool job. I wonder how I get to do that. And so in a way, this was, even though I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, there was a long time when I looked at this position and thought that could be a lot of fun. And I'm not going to lie, it really is. I get to keep up with graduates, follow, because I've been here for such a long time, kind of follow people throughout their lives a little bit, which has been fun. Get to organize reunions and some events and that sort of thing. But I'll tell you that COVID kind of gave me a chance to have a little bit of a personal and work crisis in some ways, but it also led to some opportunities. So like things that we typically, and I do mean typical and stereotypically do, are things like class reunions, couldn't do them. Football tailgates, couldn't do them. Regional gatherings, couldn't do them. And so we had to kind of be creative about what we did. And bless their hearts, our alums sort of came right along with us and tried some new things. So we have a summer event that we have done for close to 30 years that no one really knows about. And it's really kind of comical and a little bit frustrating because we've done it for such a long time. And people always go, what is that? So it's called More Than a Vacation, because it's fun like a vacation, but it's more. So More Than a Vacation is kind of a summer alumni college, some would call, but it's basically kind of leans into our idea that Emory and Henry people believe in lifelong learning. So they come back and spend 3 or 4 days on campus in the residence halls, and we'll have some speakers. We'll maybe try some things, you know, like some tactile things. We might go to like William King and do some printmaking, or we might do a little field trip and go to a community in the area and like West Jefferson or Saltville or whatever, and meet the people there and hear some history and see what they do there. So it's this sort of experiential thing that folks have been doing. I mean, honestly, some of these people have come every year we've done it. I think this summer will be our 29th year to do it. And the folks who come back to this have kind of become a family. They didn't all go to school together because they've all been come to this for such a long time. They've gotten to be a family. So so I say that to say we have taken that sort of model. And in the last 2 years when we couldn't be together to do it, and we've started doing some things online, and folks have really responded well. So we did that event online with a series of lifelong learning sort of Zoom events. And we're now doing, we've just continued doing them all throughout the year. And, you know, and not all of them hit, you know, some of them will just have, you know, 20 or 30 people pay attention to. But for instance, the other night we had one where this fellow was, he's an Emory Henry graduate, Scrapper Brody. He's one of our first African-American students. And he told the story of his sixth great grandfather. We had 50 people attend live. And so far the video has gotten, the recording of the event has gotten about 270 views. Now, if you ever think that I could get that many people in a room to hear something, then you're smoking something and you need to crack a window in the podcast studio, because there's no way that that many people would ever come together. But because people have sort of embraced this whole, you know, online world during COVID, it's allowing us to try some things. So for instance, this year, we're still trying sort of a hybrid approach to some things. We're doing some outdoor events. I'm a big bird nerd personally. And so we're doing some regional events, but we're doing them outside around some birding events, going to Seven Islands State Birding Park in Tennessee and Lewis Ginter Gardens in Richmond. Just doing some different things that makes us feel a little better with COVID, but also some stuff that we just never would have tried before COVID, like a birding event or like these online events. And so that is to say that big crisis during all that, but now we're trying this whole thing. We're doing some things in person, but also keeping some of the online stuff. So this week, for instance, we have an online event about birds, about the Eastern bluebird, but then also we're going to do some in-person things with birding. So we're just trying up some new things and seeing what it's like. I don't know if you've ever cooked spaghetti, but the old joke was, if you know it's done, if you take a piece and throw it on the refrigerator, if it sticks to the refrigerator, then it's ready. So we're throwing some spaghetti on the refrigerator and seeing what will stick. And, you know, it's been kind of fun to try some new things. And again, things that we just would never have had the courage to try in the before days, as I've heard people call it, before the pandemic. So it's been kind of fun to try some new stuff.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a lot going on, right?
Hopefully.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to being an alumni and being able to connect with everybody here, right?
Yes.
I heard you mention birds, and I think everyone in this room may or may not know, I have a fear of birds. I don't know what.
Oh, Ryan, I'm sorry.
I know.
No, people, it's a thing. People, okay. It's real. I'm sorry.
I think it stems from jealousy that I can't fly and they can. Maybe that's where it comes from. However, I, for Christmas,
have you tried?
That's another, okay. We can do a whole podcast about that. I received a book called The Field Guide to the Dumb Birds of North America. And it is Monica, I'm going to bring it to you.
I've heard of that actually.
I think it's kind of popular now. Picked up at a bookstore. It's a book about birds by a guy who doesn't like birds. So he just talks about all these birds and like this one's sort of stupid and things like that. Yeah. It's a perfect book.
Yeah, I need to see that. Definitely. Am I going to be totally offended because I'm going to say he's not dumb?
I mean,
he's
you never
brilliant.
Know.
Well, they are brilliant. You know, quick bird aside. So, you know, people want to use the expression bird brain as an insult, but, you know, crows, just as an example, Jennifer Ackerman has a book out called The Genius of Birds. And so crows, as an example, you know, they can remember faces, they can solve puzzles, they use tools. And if they have a fellow bird who dies, they recognize that fact and have like a little wake. Sometimes they bring a little gift.
Oh, wow.
Song sparrows, they have hundreds of different songs, and in a 30 minute period, they never repeat themselves, but they just keep doing different stuff and they remember what they've done. I can't remember what I talked about 30 minutes ago. They remember what they've done, And then they, you know, and they don't repeat it, but the whole thing is they're just trying to impress a female. And so they keep doing it. And then, you know, they'll start up with a whole new set in a minute. I'm telling you, they're pretty smart, those dumb birds.
That is amazing.
You may have scored a few points for the bird team.
That's cool. That. But you know,
I'm going to make you meet me on campus one day, Ron. We're going to get you and Peyton, both of you. I don't know, Peyton, are you scared of birds?
No, I'm not. No.
Okay. All right. Well, then let's get Ryan outside one day, and there's a belted kingfisher that hangs around the duck pond, and he's fascinating. And so that'll be a good one to start.
That's cool.
With.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is going to be a good question.
Okay.
What is the enjoyment that you get with being outdoors, and why does it make you so happy?
Oh gosh, that is a good question. That's a great question. Well, you know, if I were smarter, like a crow, then I would probably have a more scientific answer, because there are scientific reasons why we are happier outside. There are physical chemicals in the trees and outdoors that our body physiologically responds to. And it really does make you feel better. It makes you happier. There are studies now that show that a whole lot of what's going on with young people today with depression and ADD and some of those things are caused by the fact that they just don't go outside enough. And doctors are, honest to goodness, writing prescriptions for you to go outside. They are writing prescriptions for children to play outside, and even for adults who are doing some rehab and on some different issues, they will prescribe being outside for a certain amount of time, because the science is there to prove that being outdoors really does make you feel better. You're not just making that up. It really does make you feel better. So that's one thing. And again, I don't remember all the scientific terms, but that there is science that makes it, that makes it real, that makes it genuinely beneficial to be outside. As for me, I'm not a hiker. I'm not even particularly, I don't like to camp. I mean, I'm not particularly outdoorsy. It's just that all the cool stuff is out there. And so whether it's interesting plants or interesting birds, or crazy thing happened this morning. I had been somewhere, and when I came home, the crows were going, this was in my yard. I live across the street from campus. Crows were going wild. And I thought, are there like 100 crows in the backyard? Why is it so noisy? And I went to the back window and looked out, and they were mobbing, like sort of attacking a fox in my backyard. And this little fox was just kind of cutting through from one place to the other, and they were, you know, chasing him. So all the interesting stuff seems to be out there. And I'm just excited to get to learn more about it. It is fascinating and interesting. It's vital to learn more about the outdoors, because, you know, we live here on this planet, and there's just something new to learn every day about it. I just find it exciting and interesting. I also find it to be reassuring, and I have joked that because there's a little place nearby here that has a lot of ducks and interesting ducks that I go and look at those a lot. And I've joked that it's like my Prozac. I'm just calling it Quackzac, because there's a whole lot of ducks. It just makes me feel better to be there to watch them for a while.
Yeah, that's awesome. Especially because we're in a pretty outdoorsy area, Emory Henry College, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not from this area. I'm from Lewisburg, West Virginia. I've got a little bit of a different surrounding, but sometimes I look at my window and it's kind of the same.
Yeah, this place set home for me. I'm about an hour away from here, okay, from Tennessee. So when I came here on the visit, it's just like home.
Yeah.
So
where are you from, Peyton?
I'm from Churchill, Tennessee. So close to Kingsport, John City, Bristol, that area. So
just down 81, right?
Yep. Just go straight down 81 and get off the exit, and then you're there in a little small town. So yep, that's it.
We had an older graduate who was from there, and actually that was his nickname, was Churchill. That gets his buddies at college his nickname was Churchill.
That's awesome.
You can be Churchill Jr.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Churchill Jr. Peyton Churchill Jr.
I like
that'd
it.
Be great.
I like it. Monica, do you have any secret spots for outdoor enthusiasts around here that you could sort of let us in on?
Sure. Well, you know, I'll tell you my duck spot, because it was a secret to me, and I'm embarrassed that it was a secret to me. It's not like the town is hidden under fog like Brigadoon. It's just right down the road. But there's a little community nearby here called Saltville. or Saltville. I don't know. Nobody says Saltville. I don't know why I said that. Saltville. Saltville. And it was, it has a lot of, history, but it also has a lot of, I'll say prehistoric history. The Smithsonian folks have been up here to do archaeological digs because they, because of the salt composites that were there. They found things like mammoth, woolly mammoth bones and all this cool stuff that they've actually discovered there. And so people come up and do archaeological digs. There's a, I'm going to give another plug. There's a really cool museum. Peyton, do you know about this place in Gray, Tennessee, the Gray Fossil Museum?
Yes. It's like right up the road from me. Yep.
Right. Okay. So the Gray Fossil Museum is now connected to ETSU and they head into their archaeology department. So anyway, or maybe it's geology. Don't hold me to that. Anyway, so they come to Saltville now and also do digs occasionally because it's such a fascinating place. But where they have mined salt over the years, there are these sort of depressions. And I don't fully understand the geological reasons as to why there are ponds there, but there are these permanent ponds right smack in the middle of town. And for some reason, things that are migrating through will kind of drop down for a while and hang out. So on a routine basis, we see things there that are not supposed to be in Southwest Virginia. For instance, there is a great egret, which if you go to, if you go south, you see those all the time. We don't have those here, but there's one that has spent the entire winter over there, including he looked super miserable when it snowed. But there's just an interesting array, great common mergansers, hooded mergansers. There was a common golden eye over there recently. There's a ruddy duck today. There's just always some wild array. There's a lesser scop that's been hanging around. Just a neat array of seabirds and freshwater ducks and geese that are over there that just kind of shouldn't be there. So I sort of joke and say it's like a zoo where they sort of change out. Only they're not in cages because I don't enjoy that, but it's kind of like a zoo and they change out the animals like every couple of days because you absolutely never know what you're going to see over there. So that's probably my favorite secret spot, although again, it's on the map, so it's not terribly secret.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I'm sure we're going to have some of our listeners go out and check that out now. Curious about this. Do you know anything about the Bartlett Crow Field Station?
Yes, I love that place.
Because we don't know.
Yeah, I'd like to go. Yeah, I would like to go.
Oh, you got to go check it out. Yeah, it was a gift. The farm itself was a gift from Dr. Bartlett, who taught geology here on campus. And actually, he was one of the first people to ever show me Saltville because I didn't have him as a student, but he took one of our more than a vacation groups over. And just kind of pulled off on the side of the road and said, here, look, and hit something with a hammer and all these little fossils fell out because, again, salt was amazing. But Dr. Bartlett had this beautiful home, this beautiful farm, and he wanted the college to use it as basically like a biological field station. So Dr. Laura Hainsworth and her husband, Dr. Mark Hainsworth, he may not quite be a doctor yet, he's real close, if not. They are living there on the property and they welcome classes all the time. There are students who do projects out there. There's a phenology project that one of the kids did who was doing the semester a trail program. They do water quality experiments. They do soil quality. They do some work with succession fields where they'll cut them and burn them and then watch what comes back. And they do some things with invasive plants. I mean, it's really an amazing place and it is slap gorgeous and this beautiful views of the mountains all around. And so, yeah, you need to go out there. And fun fact, there are different types of habitat there. Habitat's one of my favorite words because I just never knew about it until recently. But the gist is, all animals, that's included, everybody has their own special habitat. So for instance, birds, since that's my thing, they don't just need those trees you draw with a crayon that looks like broccoli. They need scrubby scrub and they need weeds and they need some wetlands and they need water and they need tall trees and they need short trees and they all kinds of different habitat for different kinds of bird species. And so the Bartlett Crow Station has all kinds of different habitat. And because they're near water, one of the things they have is a cool crayfish, and it's blue. Have y'all ever seen a blue crayfish or crawdad? Yeah, me either. No. So yeah, so they have this blue crawdad, this blue crayfish, and there's a chance that it is a subspecies that hasn't even been named yet. So I'm kind of hopeful because that would be fun. Wouldn't that be fun?
That is cool.
Yeah. So yeah, no, it's a magical place. You got to go find an excuse to go out there. Just tell somebody you want to do a field trip out there, or do you have any science classes right now at all?
I've got anatomy and physiology. And I've got applied kinesiology, which is a science class. And last semester I had biology, and I'd like to take a field trip. And I was able to find out about the station from, I actually had Dr. Hainsworth as a teacher, and he mentioned that. So that was how I was able to figure it out. And I'd like to go there. Yeah. And I'm glad you gave me some information about it, because it seems really like a really neat place.
You find her in the hallway and you say, Dr. Hainsworth, you owe me a field trip.
All right, deal.
Yeah, no, I'm a communications major, Monica, so I'm staying away from the maths and the sciences. However, I do have to take a natural science here, so I'm in astronomy with Dr. Morrell, and that is a cool class as well.
Well, let me tell you, it's a great place to look at the sky, because there's not a lot of lights out there, so it's a great place. And actually, that's one of the things that I think Dr. Hainsworth would like to do more of is night sky viewing. Do some reading about dark parks, by the way. There's another fun thing for you to Google.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just loading you up with dumb stuff to Google.
You are. Cool. No, we've got a growing list here. We'll probably listen to some more 70s and 80s music and just Google all these cool things we've talked about.
That's right. Yeah.
You've given us so much information. I'll give you this one. Have you heard of Hanging Rock Raptor Observatory?
No. Tell me about it.
It's this little observatory in West Virginia. It started out as a fire scout station, so they could track any forest fires or things like that. I went up there, and it is really cool. I didn't see any birds, thank God.
Is it some place where they watch the hawk migration? I'm trying to figure out the raptor. Oh man, yeah.
You've got to look it up. It's pretty cool. It's in Monroe.
Okay, Hanging Rock.
Yes, Hanging Rock Raptor Observatory.
Okay, yeah, I'm totally going to look that up. That too would be a fun field trip.
Yeah. So, Monica, thanks for sitting down with us today, giving us part of your Sunday afternoon. This has been a really incredible conversation.
It's been eventful, yes.
Yeah.
It's been fun. You guys made this so much fun. I was afraid I just was going to have to talk about work the whole time, so I'm so excited.
That'd be boring. It's going to be exciting.
Yay!
It's full of information and learning.
It's a weekend. We're not talking about work. Yeah. No work in Studio B.
All right. So what can we do? How can I get you guys outside? Should I volunteer to take you on a field trip with Bartlett Crowe?
Let's do it.
That would be cool.
Let's do it. We'll send you a calendar invite after this. How does that
work? All right. That sounds good. When this is over with, let's do it. And I will take you all out there.
All right. Awesome. Dale.
Thank you so much, Monica. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks for asking, fellas. I appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.